Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It from WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. We just heard from journalist Connie Walker about the history of Canada's residential school system. Much of Connie's career is focused on the forgotten stories of Indigenous people, but in particular, her reporting is often centered on women. As a journalist for the Canadian Broadcasting Company, or the CBC, Connie created the Missing and Murdered series about Indigenous women who featured two powerful podcasts, Finding Cleo and Who Killed Alberta Williams, both of which were about decades-old cold cases. Earlier this year, she released a new podcast with Gimlet and Spotify titled Stolen, The Search for Germaine. As host, Connie delves into the case of 23-year-old Germaine Charlo. On June 15th, 2018, Germaine was doing what a lot of 23-year-olds do. She spent a night out bar hopping with friends in her hometown of Missoula, Montana. But her evening took a tragic turn. In the early hours of June 16th, surveillance footage captured her walking down an alley into the night, and she hasn't been seen since. The podcast features interviews with Germaine's family, friends, and investigators still chasing leads. The eight-part series turns the spotlight on the issue of underreported and undertracked violence against Indigenous women and the cycle of poverty, neglect, racism, and isolation that fuels generational trauma within the Native community, especially on tribal reservations. Our former WNYC colleague Rebecca Ibarra interviewed Connie about the podcast on All of It earlier this year, and at the beginning of the interview, she asked Connie what was different about reporting on a more recent story compared to her other podcasts.
Yeah, and I mean, in some ways, they're very similar in terms of, you know, doing a deep dive on an unsolved case. You know, I think that just, you know, whether it's 3 years or 30 years, you know, for a lot of families, you know, this never goes away. You know, Alberta Williams' sister was killed in, or Alberta Williams was killed in 1989, and her sister Claudia has spent, more than 30 years now, you know, thinking about Alberta and trying to get justice for her. But there is a difference, I think, in the fact that Germaine has only been missing for 2.5 years. Like, for her family, this is not something that they've had, years and decades to live with. This is something that they're very much, you know, still feeling the heartbreak and grief and loss and pain and still desperate in to try to find Germaine and to bring Germaine home. And I think that, you know, as a reporter, that's presented so many challenges just in terms of reporting on a case that is not a cold case, that is really an open and active investigation, has also been tricky. But I think that, you know, the previous two seasons that we did, because they were historical cases, you know, I think that we were able to focus a lot more on the history and provide some of that context. But I think that it's also really important to show how, you know, this is not something that happened decades ago that's been taken care of and that we don't have to deal with anymore. There are so many families like Germaine's family who are still searching for their loved ones. This is happening today, and we need to be paying attention to it.
I'm speaking with journalist Connie Walker about her new podcast series, Stolen, The Search for Germaine. I'm Rebecca Ibarra, filling in for Allison Stewart. You're listening to All of It on WNYC. And Connie, true crime podcasts have become a very popular genre and are sometimes knocked for being, you know, exploitative or salacious. So how do you approach your work in a way that focuses on the victims?
Yeah, I think what we're trying to do is really actually very tricky. You know, I think that, I actually am not a huge fan of true crime. I don't really listen to true crime podcasts. I think that what we're trying to do with Stolen is really, you know, kind of harness that popularity and that insatiable appetite that people have for true crime in general, but podcasting in particular. And use it to tell a bigger story. You know, the Finding Cleo season in particular, you know, was really a story about Canadian history and a story about how we got to this place where Indigenous kids are overrepresented in the child welfare system and how that's connected back to, you know, a lot of these programs and, you know, policies that were implemented in the 1960s and how that went on to impact tens of thousands of Indigenous families across Canada and resulted in Indigenous children being kind of spread out across not just North America, but around the world. You know, some of the kids taken in the 60 scoop, you know, went around the world. But I think that for me as a storyteller, being able to kind of center that story on one single family and one girl whose family was looking for her, named Cleo, allowed us, I think, to kind of capture an audience that if you had asked them, you know, are you interested in a 6.5 hour documentary essentially on institutional racism in the child welfare system in Canada? Mm. There may be an audience for that. You know, maybe I hope there would be. But I think that when we were able to frame it as, you know, the disappearance of this girl whose family says that she was stolen, murdered, and is now missing, I think that we were able to bring in a lot of people who didn't even think they cared about Indigenous issues or didn't really think that they were that interested. And that for me, that's the most, you know, that's the reason to do it. That's what I am most interested in doing. And I want people to hear Germaine's story. I want people to know Cleo's story. I want people to understand who Alberta was. And I think that this is one of the tools that we're using to try to engage people. But also, I you know, there is also a real family at the center of this. Like, this is something Germaine's family has been pushing for answers about her disappearance and pushing for answers about the investigation into her disappearance for the last 2.5 years. And mm-hmm. they deserve to know. And they deserve, her case deserves to be told, deserves to have, you know, this kind of concentrated look at it. And I think there are so many families who are living with that uncertainty, and it's agonizing for them. And I really want to amplify those voices and shine a spotlight on what they're going through, because we need to understand that, and if we're going to be able to address it in any way.
And Connie, before we get into the details of Germaine's case, I wanted to set up some background about where she came from. How long did you spend in Missoula, Montana, and the surroundings, and how would you describe that area?
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky for me because I'm a Cree woman from Saskatchewan, but I spent a lot of my time, last 20 years, living in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. I am not from the United States. I don't know what it means to be a Bitterroot Salish woman from northwestern Montana. And so for me, you know, I think that part of my reporting is also acknowledging that Indigenous people in general, although we have a lot of the same shared experiences, we're incredibly diverse across North America. And so, you know, I think I have some kind of understanding, but for me, it was really a learning, you know, a lesson in learning what it meant to be, you know, a member of the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes on the Flathead Reservation in Montana. I went there for 3 weeks to spend some time in Missoula and on the Flathead Reservation with Germaine's family. And that was really the beginning of what then continued to be, you know, a months-long investigation into not just Germaine's case, but really a learning about that history. And I think that you know, for her family, and especially relating to this crisis of violence, what we found is that you know, we hear the statistics all of the time that, you know, more than 1 in 2 Indigenous women have experienced sexual violence in their lifetime. More than 4 in 5 have experienced some other kind of physical or emotional violence. That what happened when I went there was that I met the women, the real people who were impacted by that. You know, I was struck that after 3 weeks on the Flathead Reservation or in and around the Flathead Reservation, that the majority of the women that I spoke with were a survivor of some kind of physical or sexual violence. And what does that mean? Like, how does that impact their lives? How does that impact, you know, their families and their communities? And that is really, you know, what we're hoping to illuminate in Germaine's, or in the podcast about Germaine's disappearance.
Yeah, I found that so striking in the podcast. You know, you go in to talk to, say, someone at a bar, to talk about Jermaine, and then they say, well, actually, you know, either one of my relatives has suffered from some sort of violence, one of my relatives disappeared, and it really is striking. Connie, when you look up Missoula, there's a lot about its parkland and nature, you know, its college football team, its cool downtown, but there really isn't much, you know, about the indigenous history or the fact that there are reservations nearby. So how did these descriptions of Missoula compare to the conditions of the Flathead Reservation, you know, where Jermaine was from, as you said, and those who live there?
Yeah, I mean, Missoula is all of those things, for sure. It is a beautiful place. It's amazing, actually. I loved my time there. It's beautiful. It is this vibrant college town. But I was struck by, you know, just walking around downtown, trying to get a sense of what it's like here on a Friday night in June, because I wanted to know what it would have been like 3 years before when Jermaine was there, when she went missing. And I was really struck by the fact that there were very few Native people, you know, present or visible, at least to me, in downtown Missoula, despite the fact that the Flathead Reservation, which is a huge reservation, is just 20 minutes away. I think that there's so much to explore in terms of that relationship between Indigenous people and non-Indigenous people. And the people who I talked to who are Indigenous from Missoula talk about, you know, being aware of that, you know, being aware that they're Indigenous and that they're surrounded by largely a non-Indigenous population, and that relationship has impacted their lives, but also, you know, their families' lives for generations. And one of the things about the Flathead Reservation in particular is that the majority of people who live on the Flathead Reservation are not Indigenous. That the majority of people are actually white settlers, and it was because of this allotment act that was passed that allowed for the sale of land from the Flathead Reservation, and the tribe is doing what they can to try to buy it back. But the reality is that means that, you know, that, you know, when I go into a bar on the reservation in Dixon Agency, all of the people who are there, you know, at the bar on a Saturday afternoon, you know, for the most part, they're all white. The Indigenous person was the woman who was working behind the bar that I talked to. And that for me was kind of a jarring thing, coming from Canada, where, you know, that would be very, very uncommon. But it also meant that, you know, I met somebody like this man named Bob Doty, who's a rancher in the Flathead Valley there on the Flathead Reservation. And he participated in a search for Jermaine. We went there and we participated in a search as well. And then, but Bob Doty told me about how he and his wife, they ride on horseback up in the mountains in the Flathead Reservation, and they're just looking for Jermaine. They're looking for any signs that she could have been there, and that's just something they do because they've heard about Jermaine's story. They didn't know her family, but they're part of this community, and so, you know, I think it's a really very interesting dynamic, but it's really complex as well, and we're trying to do our best to show, you know, what that means, that you know, this tension that exists between the Indigenous and non-Indigenous population definitely impacts, you know, life on the Flathead Reservation, but also, you know, impacted Jermaine as well.
Connie, in the last 30 seconds we have, what do you hope listeners will take away from Jermaine's story?
I really hope that what we're able to do is really give her family, to amplify their voices and to give them the space to share Jermaine's story, because she was so loved. She was a mother of two kids. She's a daughter. She's a granddaughter. She's a niece. And they're desperate to find Jermaine and to bring her home. And I hope people come away with an understanding of who Jermaine is and also what she represents about the larger crisis that Indigenous women and girls face in the United States today.
That was Connie Walker, interviewed by reporter Rebecca Ibarra, discussing her podcast, Stolen, The Search for Jermaine. Coming up, U.S. Poet Laureate Joy Harjo on her latest album and an anthology of poetry by Indigenous writers. This is All of It.